This podcast is a part of the Newhoff Media Podcast Network.
We are back here on a Wednesday, and happy to be here with you. A preview of tonight's Direct Line with Wayne Kent. Wayne is in the studios. If a plumber came to your church and had to fix a toilet and ended up finding, several hundred thousand dollars buried in the wall, which happened recently at the super church of,
Joel Osteen.
Yeah. It was a pretty big name.
Oh, he's a big name. Yeah. By all means, yes.
Okay.
He's a big name by all means. But they found $600,000 in the wall of
his
church.
In the wall. Now, I mean, I'm not suggesting that I know at all what happened here, but it doesn't look good.
Well, you wonder. So apparently this was happened many years ago. There was a theft of some sort.
They reported a theft, yes.
Right. Now they found it. Or they think they found it. Well, I assume it's not $600,000 you see very often. I don't know that I've ever seen $600,000 in straight cash.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, what's with that?
Okay, so they found it. If somebody steals something, the whole purpose is to steal it.
Right, not to hide it.
Not to put it in a wall for 10 years.
And then come back 10 years and maybe find it?
You're saying the plumber is involved?
I don't know. It makes you wonder, doesn't it?
Well, the plumber is now talking to news outlets saying, hey, I would at least thought I would get something.
He got $20,000.
Oh, okay, good. I guess. This whole thing seems strange. Now, there are some on the left side of the political aisle that are now using this story in particular, saying, all right, it's time to start taxing churches.
For what reason?
I'm just telling you what's being put out there.
You can't just simply be somebody stole money.
Don't you think that these super churches like this, I mean, it does sound all kinds of fishy. Sticking with the Christian reference, a lot of those out on the cars in the parking lot, that you have this kind of money stuffed into a wall. I mean, this is mafia-style stuff.
You would think they reported some loss of some years ago where a safe was broken into. I want to know why they had $600,000 in a safe. That doesn't make, it's all a matter of scale, right? $600,000 is a lot of money regardless, obviously, but In a church of that size, their budget, I've no idea what their budget is, but it's significantly larger than the church I serve, I'm sure. They've got, 15 times more people or whatever.
Do you worry about these stories overall? I mean, and we've talked about this, ad nauseum, over the years, about these super churches and the money that's involved, and some of it seems a little shady and how it gets spent. There's very little oversight and what all that means.
I can't speak for Joel Osteen's church, specifically, but I am aware that there's a lot of money involved. There's a church up in Chicago, Harvest Bible Chapel, Harvest something or other, Harvest Bible, whatever the case. There was a guy up there by the name of James McDonald, and as he was being fired a couple of years ago in his late 50s, early 60s, and he grew the church. He started it and grew it, and come to find out he had like $1 million salary or $1 million of. He was off in Africa doing this, that, and the other, and charging all sorts of personal expenses to the church. It just obviously. He got fired for being arrogant and for bad money management and everything. And so, you go, well, come on, guys, work a little better. If you're going to be responsible to that size, you've got to accountability has to go up, right?
If people come to your church and they give you money, then I suppose that's up to you and whatever sort of board of directors type of an arrangement you have in place to spend that money. And if people are okay with you spending that money that way and they're the ones giving you the money, then I don't see any reason to change that. I mean, I might from the outside looking in go, that looks stupid to me, but that's not up to me and it's not my money.
Well, yeah, there is a point where I'm aware of this. That when it comes to the life I live and the responsibilities I have for the congregation I serve, I say to staff regularly, we have a huge trust. We have a huge cachet of trust in the life of our church right now. One bad financial move, that trust erodes in a moment.
Okay.
I'm aware of that.
It doesn't seem to, though.
Well, I don't know. $600,000
speaking specifically for you, but it doesn't overall seem to take away from people. I mean, how long did it take for PTL to go from the penthouse to the outhouse, and people still kept sending money?
They did, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know about that. I think that there's probably maybe a case that you're milking money out of people if you're being irresponsible and living some sort of lavish lifestyle, and maybe they are unaware of that. Most churches have elders or deacons. There's a system, right?
There's a system in play, but I'll tell you, there is no one system across the board. And it depends on, again, it's a function of size and also how the church is set up in the original days, how long the pastor's been there. Like in a congregation that I serve, I've been there for coming up on 28 years, there's a whole lot more trust. If I said to the congregation, we're going to spend $100,000 on this, and here's the cash we've got it set aside, or we've been saving, or we need $100,000, they're going to respond significantly different than if I'd only been there for 28 days.
Yeah, I know for sure. There's no doubt. I think that translates across the board in lots of areas.
Yeah.
I just think this story's weird because not many people have access to put stuff in a wall.
Yeah, so who put it in the wall is the big question, right?
Yeah.
So you wonder who put it there and when were they planning to come back and get it?
Why do you say come back? This to me is a total inside thing. Who has access to the wall more than the people that are in there?
Do you think so?
Well, you think somebody tore down a wall and rebuilt the wall?
I understand that. I understand that. But somehow that money got in there. And why did it wait there for a decade or however long it is? It's a fascinating story. It's problematic for me in many ways. Just first of all, why is there that much cash in the building?
Well, it was cash and checks is what they, that's what they reported stolen, $200,000 in cash, $400,000 in checks. But the guy, the plumber who found this and turned it in, said it was like just hundreds and hundreds of envelopes of cash.
Strange, isn't it?
Yeah.
Would you have liked to have been there when the guy opened the wall up?
Well, yeah, sure. I know it's my own personal thing. I have a distrust of these super pastors that have mixed up sort of reality star TV with I'm a man of God, but I'm going to fly in a private jet. I don't, it's between them and their flock. Like I said before, whatever you decide to give, that's your business. And if you're okay with the way they spend it,
yeah, but
that's your business.
I think that level of mistrust, a certain level of non-gullibility is appropriate. I don't know what non-gullibility. I don't have a good word for that.
I think the tax exempt argument ought to be made today in the churches becoming so political. That's to me where your tax exempt status, meets the line.
Yeah, of course, Brian. The issue is though, does that mean if you are a church, you don't have a responsibility to speak to the issues of the day?
It's never been as blatant to me. I mean, outside of, you could go down to the South in the day and find them using, religion to justify the KKK, and we've had all kinds of history of that kind of thing. But from the pulpit today, being so political, if you're going to be political and you're going to play in politics and you're going to tell people how to vote, then I think you got to be in the sandbox with everybody else.
There's maybe some validity to that, but it has to apply, in my opinion, it would have to apply equally to the right and to the left.
Totally. I mean, why would it not?
Well, it doesn't appear to be. I mean, if I was to put a political sign, allow a political sign to go in the front yard of our church, first of all, I just wouldn't do it.
But you're not supposed to.
But there are churches that do, and invariably, careful how I say this, it would be those on the left who would put political signs in the yard.
Okay.
At least in this town.
In this town. I can show you plenty of people through the Donald Trump presidency and beyond who have totally politicized their church and their congregation.
And I think it's to their own detriment.
Yeah.
In the long run.
I mean, to me, though, if you're talking about tax-exempt status, that's where you're crossing a line. What people choose to give to you or support financially out of their own pocket to a church they belong to, that's between you and them.
You realize that from my thinking through about situations around the world, it's only in a few Western countries where there's non-taxing of the church.
Why is that? What's the history of that?
I think that's the separation of church and state within the United States,
yeah,
particularly. And we all left Europe in an effort to say we are pushing back from any taxing authority whatsoever.
And freedom of religion.
And you're not going to tell me how I'm going to believe or how I'm going to speak. So consequently, we have that history, but it's not like to receive a tax write-off for giving charitable donations is very, very it's an American and Canadian phenomena. And that's about it. Most countries around the world, if you give to charity, That's lovely, but you're not getting a tax break.
We're also the most generous nation on the earth.
Absolutely.
I mean, not even close.
Not even close. Yeah. No. So I think if you're wondering to where the tax exempt thing comes, it's from the separation of church and state, which I like.
Is my point about getting involved in politics.
Yes, I understand it fully. It's a catch 22.
So how do you draw that line personally?
I have rarely said anything from the pulpit about politics. Very, and certainly not in a political, when we're in the middle of a political race.
Mm-hmm.
I have never endorsed a candidate, either in the pulpit or even on the air. I've never said you should vote for this person or this is who I'm voting for or anything like that. I've simply, I might have let my opinions be known about the policies or perhaps the, for example, there are these flyers that come around every political cycle from various organizations trying to speak to the religious community, and they say, "Well, you put these in your bulletin." Well, first of all, we don't have bulletins, but
a bulletin.
Yeah.
Wow. There's a blast.
There's a blast from the past. Will you pass these out at church? And they meet certain legal requirements in that they don't endorse particular candidates, but you can read them and you go, "Okay, this is for a left leaning. This is for the Democrats. This is for the Republicans."
Sure.
And churches do it, and I say, "Absolutely not. I'm not in that business. This is not what we're here about."
There is a certain rise. I agree with you that there are certain segments of the religious field on the left that have always been way more political or allowed to be more political. But since Donald Trump, that has there are churches now preaching, about January 6th and the election being stolen. And it's not hard to find these people. And there's fairly good sized congregations that are buying into this. I just feel like we're heading down a path where if we don't get politics out of some areas of our life, the politics is now the religion.
That's exactly true. The politics is the religion. And people it would appear to me that religious people, seem to take their politics more seriously than they do their own faith. There you go.
I believe it. I read a Gallup polling number yesterday that said that Republicans believe less in doctors than they did. Literally in doctors. And now, that's a political phenomenon, right?
Yeah, it's certainly. What's caused that? What has caused that in the last decade?
Lying through their teeth and then other people lying through their teeth to justify the other people lying through their teeth. I don't know how else to explain it.
Taking, if you will, if we could take the pandemic out of the situation or out of the story about that lens that we're looking through life at altogether, what's caused American politics or American culture would be a better way to question. What's caused us to become one more so polarized, and why are some people so gullible on either side of the aisle?
Why do people yesterday recognize the attack on Pearl Harbor, right? Universally, if you're of a certain age, and certainly I don't remember it in my lifetime, but my grandparents and great-grandparents, why do we look at 2,200 lives that way 80 years later, and more people have died of COVID than war casualties in all of the wars that we have fought in the history of America, and say it's a hoax?
I have no answer for you. It's a great rhetorical question, but I have no answer.
Well, I don't have the answer either.
It's rather absurd, isn't it?
It absolutely is. I don't understand, though, why you would quit believing in doctors. That is just sort of, it's not entirely quit, but if you look at the numbers from 5 years ago, 10 years ago to today, there's a significant reduction in the GOP, meaning people of the Republican Party, and their belief in doctors.
So what is it that's caused this mistrust? Is that across, what is it that's caused people to say, "I don't trust people that I used to trust," or "I don't trust institutions to the level I used to"? The church, whether it be the church, whether it be government, whether it be...
That's a very... That's the million-dollar question. Or if you're Joel Osteen, way more than that. is that people... Because it's all become politicized. So your anger or your passion or your deeply held beliefs and convictions all get wrapped up into it's got to be this way or that way. There's no gray in life anymore.
Right.
We just divide a line right down the middle and go, you're on this side, you're on that side. One thing I can tell you 25 years of doing this, I was called a leftist totalitarian on Twitter this week. That's a new one. But if you have your...
On what grounds?
These grounds. There's no grounds. But my point being, if you dare to get outside of those lines, meaning you go, well, what about this or what about that, then you are automatically judged by both sides with equal conviction that you are something. That's just what we do today.
I would be very interested to see what history will say about these first 30 years of the 21st century.
Yes.
Like 40 years from now, when people who are alive now will be old enough that they can reflect back on it. Not when you and I'll be long gone by then.
First of all, I will tell you, I think the media has a role in all this. I'm not going to let us off the hook, but the numbers are in 2010, 73% of Republicans polled, and this is literally Gallup. This is a legit organization. 73% were confident of doctors' advice, their own personal doctor. That's dropped 13% in 10 years. So now 60%. So now you're getting down to, certainly the majority still do, but 40% is a lot. But how do we report it? You know, we report the headline, 200 healthcare workers laid off, you know, from a hospital for not getting the vaccine. And if you're on the left, you go, good, fire them. If you're on the right, you go, those people are being mistreated. The story is, that hospital has 98.9% vaccination rate. They employ 14,000 people when you look at the number. But that's how we report it, right?
Headlines.
Right?
Absolutely. I mean, that's how the media
would story report. Isn't that the hospital reached almost 99% vaccination rate. The story is they fired 200 freedom fighters.
Well, what's above the fold?
There's no fold for 90% of the people that are consuming this. But it's still, it is interesting because we've got the sizzle always in front of the steak instead of having the steak. And people want the steak, I think. I mean, most people do. Kind of even-keeled, open-minded people want the steak, not the sizzle.
I think we do. I believe we do. But it would, again, 40 years from now, 50 years from now, will it be the way people look back and say, okay, this is where we went off the rails. And I don't know. I don't think it's just in the last couple of years. It probably goes back 20 years or so when we went off the rails.
There were building blocks, yes. Trump and COVID were an acceleration factor that certainly goes back to civil rights, to the Nixon, to Watergate, to Vietnam. The Chicago 7. I mean, you could fill in the blanks of a very long history of turmoil and strife that just when it hit a certain point, it just then accelerated faster than we've ever seen anything.
It's the story of a guy who's taken a swing at a golf ball off by just, you know, 3 or 4 millimeters when the ball is hit. You go down 200 yards and it's way off, you know, you're off the green altogether. And I wonder if you could go back to where did we go wrong?
Wrong, in my opinion, in politics, is this all one way or all the other way mentality? Because I still believe that the vast majority may lean left, may lean right, but they are more in the center than what drives the news, than what drives politics, than what drives elections.
But then the election cycle is going to come around, and we're going to be driving the politicians to make, I say we, the public is going to be pushing the politicians to make these statements and take these stances more to the left and to the right than where they are personally.
Yeah.
I mean, Joe Biden. Centrist guy all of his life. Now he's in the presidency, but he had to go so far left.
Listen, there's nothing about Joe Biden's political career, or for that matter, Vice President Kamala Harris's political career, that is progressive left. I mean, they have been sort of right down the middle, mainstream Democrats. That's the biggest battle they're fighting out in Washington, D.C. is not with the Republicans. It's with the progressive left.
I would agree.
Okay. But if you say that, if I say that, then I am a left-leaning, liberal, divisive media member, you know, who's trying to give you. But if you just look at the facts, which are there over a span of a career, there's nothing progressive about either one of them.
But then, Brian, the problem is that facts don't really.
I'm old school enough to still believe that facts actually matter.
You would hope so. Absolutely hope so. Yeah,
I would think that wouldn't become old-fashioned. I mean, we can argue all day about Adele getting replaced by a 17-year-old unknown single-name teenager on YouTube. I would still like to believe that facts actually matter.
You hope so. In the long run, they do.
Do they?
I think so. I want to, yeah, in the long run. In the long run, Nixon's decried as an evil man. And, you know, because I just was reading a story this week about how what Bob Dole said about
You know what Nixon was? Nixon wasn't evil. Nixon was small and petty. And that's what I think people misjudge about politicians at large. They're not world conquerors. They're not geniuses. They're not sort of twirling the mustache, you know, of the evil supervillain. They're petty and they're small. Why do you think everybody gets busted in the state of Illinois? They always get busted for like the smallest, right? They're not bilking millions. It's like the guy always goes to jail on a $5,000 bribe.
Yep. I'm not disagreeing.
Small. Petty.
I don't disagree.
And they don't lead.
All right, we'll
get back. We'll get a preview of tonight's Direct Line. And then I want to know from your perspective, you are very much a pro-life person.
Yep.
And I don't know what's going to happen with the Supreme Court, and everybody's all over the place. And there's at least a reasonable expectation that this could become a state by state battle. Mm-hmm. Will there be more money ever spent on anything than this in our near future?
All right.
On both sides.
We'll wait and see what we say on the other side of the break.
All right. We'll take the break. Back with Wayne Kinn on this Wednesday. Stay tuned.
When you talk tires, you need to talk about who you can trust. Palmer Tire is now offering Michelin and Goodyear tires. Palmer Tire is the area's only Michelin and Alliance certified tire professionals. Just tell them which kind of car you drive and they'll go over all the numbers with you. The number you really need to remember, though, is 875-4266. They'll take the time to talk tire size, speed rating, load index, tire pressure, and of course, price. Talk to someone you can trust. Palmer Tire, your Goodyear and Michelin tire dealer.
Holidays are about friends and family. They are the most important people in your life. But you have a secret. You make it to work every day and work hard to provide for your family. But in reality, you couldn't function without the alcohol. You know you are drinking more than you should, but you just can't stop. You're stuck. Gateway Foundation knows what you're going through. Our team of professional counselors, physicians, nurses, and psychiatrists are here to help you find a clear, healthy new you. The you before the alcohol took over. And a new understanding of how to achieve and maintain long-lasting recovery. The hardest step is the first one. But that path you're on, where is it leading you? Call 877-505-HOPE and let Gateway Foundation get you on the path you and your family will be happy on. Gateway Foundation, addiction medicine, saving lives.
I'm back to finish what we started.
Top of the key three, feeling it. Oh! Got it. Oh, it's Trent Frazier's night.
Oh, oh. I'm back because the fight isn't over.
It's Williams open three. It's good. Oh! Huge shot.
I'm back for another year with my brother.
Curbelo, hello for a slam.
I'm back to leave a legacy.
Pass inside of Coburn for the slam dunk.
Now it's on you.
We need you back.
Get your tickets today
at FightInLineI.com.
Ho, ho, ho! Who's ready for the 12 bars of Christmas in downtown Decatur? Sign up your team of four and start planning that prize-winning best-dressed outfit. Kick off at Dorney's at 10 a.m. on December 11th and crawl to the KC Hall to finish up the night with the River Bottom Nightmare Band. Ho, ho! Don't miss the bar crawl of bar crawls. The 12 bars of Christmas in downtown Decatur, December 11th. Get more information at 5kingscharity.org. And thanks to our sponsors, Decatur Earth Mover Credit Union and Newhoff Media of Decatur.
You're listening to Byers & Company, streaming live at nowdecatur.com.
We are back here with Wayne Kinn, who will be on tonight at 5 o'clock for the Direct Line. All right, so all attention politically right now, all the currency is being spent both rhetorically and financially on Roe v. Wade and what's going to happen with the Supreme Court. I'm a little surprised that we are here. Meaning that I just sort of assumed that this law of the land over the last, well, you know, since the early 1970s would not ever be in danger of being addressed this way. I still don't know what's going to happen. But are we in for the biggest political fight of our lifetime?
I have reason to think so, absolutely, because the battle lines have been drawn by all means. I think from those of us who were on the pro-life side, we were aware that the national law had been, the federal law had been put in place. And there was a concerted effort, probably I'd say, as I think about it, coming out of the early 90s to say the pro-life movement has been approaching this the wrong way from a legal perspective. And that legally the way to deal with it was to go and visit with individual states. And fair enough, I think that's what's happened. And so this case is before the Supreme Court, comes out of Mississippi. And it will be a situation where individual states, I think, I mean, it seems to me that individual states is the way to go if you're a pro-life person as I am, because there is a way in which to reduce or at least bring back the time in which an abortion is allowed.
Do you feel...
When I say that in terms of conception.
The nuances of this argument are all over the place. My question is more of, you know, states' rights. I mean, that's what Republicans used to sort of stand for, was, a smaller federal government and letting the people decide where they live, how they live. And that's all been, thrown away according to whatever argument you want to be on. Nobody has any principles anymore as far as the parties are concerned on standing on any core principles. But are we getting close to, and I'm not saying that we're headed for a civil war, but are we getting closer to where instead of living in the United States of America, we're going to have all of these different states that depending on what you drive through, it's Mars and Venus as to how we live our lives as Americans?
It would seem to be the case. I mean, certainly, I was on the West Coast just yesterday, and the attitude out, there's... Interestingly, by the way, the idea of being in Seattle just yesterday and being here today is just mind-boggling to me, even though I've done it many, many times.
So the whole air travel thing still
it's still stunning to me. It's remarkable. Okay. Don't you think so? I would love to chat with you about that sometime. But I think in regards to we're such a huge country, 330 million people, and where we live is so... at times provincial in the sense that don't use that word in a bad way, but in the sense that we just see, for those of us living in Decatur, we're interested in what happens in Decatur, and what happens in Decatur, Georgia, has no influence upon us whatsoever. And I don't know that that's good. I think we are becoming more and more insular. Maybe that's a good word rather than provincial. We're becoming more and more insular, even despite all the information we have in coming at our way, because we have so much information coming our way. I wonder if it causes us to just simply retreat into, well, this is my space.
Yeah, this feels more like the Walking Dead, falling into camps thing than it does like the United States of America, that we've lost the common interest.
We absolutely have.
Even in COVID, whatever side you're on, the idea that I watched a documentary, and I got to tell you, it is the hardest documentary that I've ever watched, meaning that it is the toughest to sit through. It's on Hulu. It's called The First Wave, and there was a documentary crew that was in New York City in the spring of 2020, and there was a hospital that gave them access, and this is like March through June of 2020, when it was the worst of the worst in New York City. And it is unbelievable. There's not a lot of narrative. You just get to consume what these frontline people consumed. And that was part of the problem with this, is that this all took place behind closed doors because there were no visitors allowed. There was nobody in. So the nurses and doctors and patients that were dying were the only people that were experiencing this outside of like a plastic bag with a phone or an iPad in it as people said goodbye to loved ones. It's heartbreaking to watch.
We have again, I think 30 years from now, we'll look back on this 2 to 3 year period. We've obviously got a ways to go yet as a bottoming out of our nation. I'm hoping that I would like to think that we come out a better nation. So far, I haven't seen the evidence of that.
No, I think it's getting worse. I don't think it's getting better. I don't think we've bottomed out. And I know that's that may sound cynical, but I can just tell you, the people the scene I just described, and what was heartbreaking was these professionals who are professionals who deal in life and death and do this every day for a living in ERs across the United States of America, to watch their devastation as there was nothing they could do, and this new thing where there really wasn't any hope and there was no cure and there was no vaccine, and the idea, 35-year-old guy, just heartbreaking, the kids are on the iPad, the nurses are holding up for him. And they put him on a ventilator and he goes, watching this man die.
Yeah.
diabetic, overweight, so he had some of the stuff that's going to, you know, attack even more. But the mocking of that by people. I mean, when did we lose our humanity? Because there have been plenty of people I've known and respected, that say, you know, they were 70, they were 65. We lost 4 million years in the last 2 years of life.
A reasonable question would be, I'm being careful when I ask, but it's a reasonable question. Did we lose our respect for life when Roe v. Wade came along?
Can
you tie the two things together? I wonder if you could. It seems to me you could. Because at either end, if life is not valuable, then life is not valuable, right? Whether or not it's a 35-year-old man who's dying in front of his kids or a young baby.
Maybe. I would suggest to you, though, that there's a lot of... Well, okay, possibly. That doesn't explain Ruth, who loves Christ so much on her Facebook page, you know, that's the first thing that you see, who is in the middle of this argument.
No, it doesn't at all. Frankly, it points out her hypocrisy to the nth degree.
But there's a lot of that.
There's a lot of it.
Yeah.
Absolutely there is. I cannot deny that.
So, I mean, and it's not only that. I mean, it's not solely coming from one source, but it is across the spectrum.
Yeah, it's across... The present setting that we face as a nation... I'm living through it, you're living through it, but I don't know that we have enough distance either personally or as a nation yet to figure out what's really going on.
I don't either. I mean, I'm optimistic in some ways. If you get off Facebook and get into real life where you see, you know, young leaders in action down collecting toys for CASA and people coming to the Christmas parade or Vespers or people getting on with their lives and holidays, there is a hyper-focus in this digital space, in this social media space, that maybe doesn't reflect the reality of us as human beings.
I would say that's exactly the case. Because even the people who I might disagree with and the stuff they're saying on social media, everything, you get in front of them, they seem to be a lot softer in front of you. And it's hard then to go, okay, well, why are you taking these crazy positions online, yet I'm here talking to you? And yet, you're the nicest guy.
It's a rabbit hole. I think the thing that's going to come out of this pandemic that eventually, historically, when we go back and look, is not the mask or the vaccines or it's going to be mental health in this country.
Absolutely.
And there is, I don't know if you saw the Surgeon General yesterday's report on teenagers and the number of suicide attempts and all of that stuff. And then the sad fact behind that is if you got everyone to address their mental health tomorrow, there's not enough resources to take care of.
No, we don't have it. I'm wondering about the impact upon children, too.
But that's what the Surgeon General report was about, kids.
The socialization of children is so important in their early years, and are they getting to do that? I spent time with a little two-year-old, two-and-a-half-year-old this past week, two or three days with her, who had not been in touch with anyone except her mother and father since she was born until we saw her this past weekend.
Oh, look at this shooting in Michigan and the parents that are involved. I for one, am glad. I don't want to hear the left versus right argument. I think we ought to have parents held more accountable for what conditions they're letting their kids grow up in.
Absolutely.
That's
never gone away.
We've taken away any responsibility.
I understand.
But we've not placed a premium on mental health and what it means to people.
You're exactly right.
And right now, and Nick, this will be hard for people to believe in it. If you don't have this in your life or your family, you know, good for you. But you could be like having suicidal ideation. You could be like at the bottom. And the medical community in this community would say, we'll see you in 12 weeks. That is how hard it is to get help.
I know that we do not have enough professionals here in the city by any means.
But it's not just here. This isn't a geographical argument that there's something wrong. This is the country we live in because we've prioritized all the wrong things.
You're exactly right.
And I hope that out of this comes better.
You'd hope so. We haven't hit the bottom yet, as you say. I mean, I'm not talking about whether or not the numbers of people dying, but in terms of the impact of what COVID will have upon us, I don't think we've hit the bottom of that yet.
No, I don't think so either. But this acceleration factor works in negative ways and positive ways. And let's hope that the positive ways means that we can identify, instead of all of the arguing about this superficial stuff, I mean, that we can identify real problems to solve. And healthcare will be forced to change.
But we want quick fixes, but healthcare doesn't move very quickly
at all. But it has to. Scott Galloway, who is an atheist, so you probably wouldn't be digging his stuff. But to me, that's not the important thing. He compares it going for healthcare to going to a Best Buy. And if you went to a Best Buy and every time you entered the door, they made you sit in a corner and fill out a clipboard full of paperwork for 15 or 20 minutes and take a number, you'd never go to Best Buy again. And if you had to do that every single time you went to Best Buy, right?
Yeah, why do I need the same information? Why do they need so much? I always want to go, wait, you already have this. Well, sir, would you just help us make sure our data is right?
I'm telling you, but I think they're going to be forced just financially and what they've learned. I hope I'm already blowing through two breaks here. Nick, I apologize. Not very disciplined this morning, but that's okay. It's an interesting conversation. I want to take a couple minutes to talk about tonight at 5 o'clock.
Andrew Ford, who is the manager of Master Brand Cabinets, ran into him recently. They're putting out like 2,000 cabinets a day down in Arthur. They've got
that's a ton.
Hundreds of people employed down there, and I go, how come we don't know this story?
Yeah,
and like 20,000 a week. 20,000 kitchens a week. Are you kidding me?
Really? It's an Amish place.
I have no idea.
They're known for. I mean, in that area, they're woodworking.
So I just said, I got to get you on the air and figure out what's going on that you guys are putting out all this kind of work and we don't even know about.
Okay, who is it again?
Andrew Ford of Master Brand Cabinets.
Okay, in Arthur.
In Arthur.
Yeah.
So these sorts of things interest me.
Do you like to visit the Amish?
It's okay. Yeah, you go down there.
I sensed whiff of judgment there.
I'm not going to go to the I'm not going to go to the smorgasbord. I'll say that.
Here's my question about the Amish. And I got a lot of mad respect for people who walk the walk, right? I mean, I think Catholics are the only one that get the abortion death penalty. They get both sides of if life is actually precious, then life is precious. They're all in on that. But the Amish, the one thing I don't understand is, like, you can go into an Amish shop down there and they've got credit card machines.
Our building was built by the Amish.
Or they have a phone down the street that everybody uses. Like, the phone's not in the house, but you're still using the phone. I don't understand that.
I don't either.
I find it interesting, though.
So we had an Amish crew build our church, and they would be driven there to the building.
Yeah.
But then they had all their equipment, including forklifts and vehicles and all sorts of stuff, putting up walls, cranes.
Now, were they Mennonites? Because we're talking a whole different thing.
They were Amish working with men. The Mennonites would drive them all there.
The Mennonites were the carpool people, yes.
And then once they got there, these guys were brilliant at using all this power equipment. I go, praise the Lord, they're using their stuff.
Honest to God, and I don't know if, like, literally, no zippers. I mean, the stuff is, like, there's something kind of admirable about it, and then at the same time I go, how in the world can they not evolve? I have, like, those equal thoughts at the same time.
All right,
what else besides cabinetry?
Also,
the only non-Amish guy from Arthur.
Have we blown past the news, dude?
Yeah, we did.
Okay,
Elon
Musk has said that he doesn't want to have immortal life, or in the sense that he doesn't want to have people not die for the sake of evolution. He says, otherwise we get too stuck in the mud. We need to be people who die.
Okay.
So that the human race can move forward and new creative ideas can come along. That's interesting to me because, after all, part of Christianity is the fact that there's going to be life eternal. Now, obviously, there's that big thing in the middle called death. But I find that very interesting. He says, no, one of the reasons we need to die is so that humanity will move forward.
He says we need more children, too, or we're doomed.
Does he have any kids himself, though?
I don't know. He also wants to put implants in your head by the end of next year. So, I mean, there's a whole conversation. And why does that conversation always go to the Antichrist in Christian circles?
Oh, I don't know about that. You think
you don't think someone is?
Oh, someone is, but that's just being silly.
Okay. I could spend 2 hours just talking about the Antichrist with you because I grew up watching The Omen, Wayne. I mean, in churches were a lot of brimstone and fire and what are those books, Left Behind or whatever, series.
I understand. Yeah, bless your heart. I want to say bless your heart. That's your understanding.
It's not my understanding of it. I'm just saying Christians have made that the Darth Vader of my lifetime.
You're right. I remember. So here's a true story, okay? So it was in the house I grew up, was sinful to go into a movie theater, okay? Long story behind all that, which is just ludicrous, but nonetheless.
I got you.
Nonetheless, 15 years of age, the youth group, without any adults involved, all us kids, 20 of us, decided we were going to go to a movie theater.
Man, Rebels.
Rebels.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're in the movie theater.
What movie did you see?
We saw the Poseidon Adventure, when Shelley Winters dies in this Poseidon Adventure. This is back in the 70s.
Gene Hackman, yes. Right, yeah. Great film.
Great film, okay. What I remember most about being in that movie theater was afraid that the rapture was going to occur, because we'd been taught in Sunday school that you could never be raptured through the ceiling of a movie theater.
Wow. See, I could do this for 3 hours and not just, I mean, you just did everything for me. Thank you.
Silly.
Right.
How absolutely silly. Now, here, those of you who are people of faith and just struggling for what I've said right now, we have not presented our message well or in a credible way that talks realistically about what the second coming of Jesus Christ
looks like. Okay, so let's do that next Wednesday, because we're way over time, and we'll never do it justice in like 60 seconds of wrapping that up. But the equivalent of that, right, the sectarian equivalent of that, was having fourth graders under their desks for a nuclear bomb drill. I mean, so it's not just Christians.
No, we just have this predisposition to always expect the worst and... Where's the positivity? Where's the, hey, we can do life better? We can plan for our children to have a better world.
I agree. Listen, we're on the same page, I think.
I think we are, usually.
Yeah. I'm not sure that anybody in your church wants to hear that.
No. Hopefully this is the understanding of the people of my church, that we are, what are we doing as a congregation to make this community better?
You bet. From one leftist totalitarian to another. I agree with you. I thank you. We'll see you tonight at 5. And
you've been listening to the Newhoff Media Podcast Network. For more, visit newhoffmedia.com.